Hello and welcome to episode number 8 of the AI Boardroom. I oftentimes forget to say that's the name of our podcast, but by episode 8, you know. Svetlana, you're welcome. How are you doing? Well, I don't welcome you. It's like it's our podcast, right?
Yeah, doing awesome. I mean, it's great. Lots of news this week. I'm really excited about what we're going to be talking about. But yeah, just we recently came from vacation. That's why I think we skipped a week from posting. So I have a little bit more color to my skin than I usually do. I don't glow in the dark.
Now it's fine. Like the episode 7 was. That was colorful.
There's a lot of contrast. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm well and rested and came back with lots of things kind of happening in the world. I was very much fully disconnected just because I think it was we talked about. And just the internet was very intermittent. It was just not that great, but it was a good excuse to really disconnect and take a break.
Sometimes it's nice. I had one experience where we were in a club where you were not allowed to use a phone. We were like a friend of mine was going to be married, and we had his what is it called in English? Bachelor's party, right? So, and we had this bachelor's party, and we were in the club, and you weren't allowed to use a cell phone, and we were like in there for like 2 or 3 hours, and it was really nice to just like you weren't allowed, and you could talk to the people there. Like it was really nice, really cool.
Disconnect from your device, and then really pay attention. Yeah, so I think that's what we did. Yeah, and now I'm kind of back and well rested and connected back to the network of AI news and all kinds of things that are happening. So,
talking about AI news and bachelor's parties and getting married, like Nvidia seems to be married to their valuation, right? And that's a good marriage.
We did talk about that. It's really funny. So before, I think I went on vacation last time, I did some research. It was like, you know, Nvidia just broke the 1 trillion mark of, you know, valuation.
That was last year. Like, I think now they broke 2 trillion.
Was it? Okay. Maybe I'm mixing up my numbers, but like the way their growth is, astounding. And now they're, I think, number 3 most valuable company, like tech company.
With 2.2, they definitely are. Yeah. I think Apple's up there in the 2 trillion club, and I think Microsoft's there. Microsoft even like reached 2 trillion at some points, I think. 3 trillion, which is completely ridiculous. And it, of course, it's overvalued. Yeah? Like that's and this is no financial advice. Like, we have to put the disclaimer here. But yeah, it's ridiculous. I read stories about Nvidia employees that were already there for like 10 years or so, and most of the Silicon Valley companies, they give out stock to their employees as part of the salary. And I just looked it up. 10 years ago, Nvidia stock was at $10 billion. And now it's like 2 trillion.
Wow.
And if you collected stock for 10 years, you already got a good amount. And people just quit their jobs or reduce to half, only doing like half the hours because they say, okay, like I pay out now.
Yeah. I can retire I can do work for fun now.
Yeah, and that's actually an issue for Nvidia because they need more people and not like losing the ones they have.
Nvidia, if you're hiring, I'm just kidding. At the old stock prices and like if you can,
the old stock price.
I'm down.
I don't want much. Just to position the board.
Yes, please.
A yearly salary of like 500K, and I'm fine.
Not asking much, you know.
But yeah, Nvidia, or I think I'm not sure how it's now, like a week or so after the event, but it definitely helped the stock price, I bet, because Nvidia kind of got a lot going, and especially the new Blackwell architecture, which is more of a platform now. I think they talked a lot about a lot of stuff, and most of that was really impressive. What was your most most collectible moment from that?
I mean, I'm big in robotics, so I was really impressed by their lineup of robots. And experimentation and some of the things that they kind of are doing. But the fact that they're experimenting with so many different versions of robots, you know, you kind of see, what's it called? Tesla come up with one, OpenAI has their, their one
figure.
You know, and so everyone kind of has just like one best foot forward that they're putting. And I was really impressed by NVIDIA just kind of exposing all of their lineup, regardless of what kind of the capabilities there are.
Yeah, but they also don't do like their own robots. They build like basically a foundation models. Like NVIDIA calls it AI Foundry. Mm-hmm. So they basically say, okay, we deliver you all the tooling, which you, of course, execute on our GPUs. but we give you all the tooling, all the simulation stuff so that you can build the robots. So they basically say, okay, hey, that's your market. There's your gold. And we used to have the X and we still have, and we have a bit more. So just buy the tooling from us and the rest will go by itself. So that's how they market it, at least. But still pretty impressive.
But they do have their own researchers, and so they're doing some proof of concepts, I'm sure, with those robots. So, yeah.
And they work also with universities a lot, as far as I understand. And like a lot of stuff that's coming out, no matter who it is, it's like based on university research. So,
where is Boston Dynamics? We've been hearing about.
I had some updates from them, and as far as I understood, like I've talked to someone who's really deep into the robotics space, and Boston Dynamics got some updates, and they also have all the government contracts and that stuff, so they are really well suited. Okay. And they still have, like, technology-wise, like all the motors and all the everything like that's physically working on that robot. They're still upper class. Like, I think there is no one even close. Did you know that Boston Dynamics was part of Google and Google just like got rid of them?
I've heard about that. Yeah, interesting.
It's like to say it like it's not the best decision Google ever made. And that's also what the employees think.
So, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, Blackwell Architecture. They have now, I think they said, they reached 8 years, 1,000x performance increase in AI calculations, which are mostly vector calculations. They cheated a bit on that number because they basically defined a format which they call FP4, which is a 4-bit format, which is just you have like just a smaller amount of bits for defining a weight. So I think usually weights are FP16, so you have 16 bits, and the amount of numbers this bits can represent are a lot larger, and so you can dial in a lot more nuanced weights. Mm-hmm. Whilst you can reduce the bit size to 4-bit, it gets a lot faster. Like, it's also used a lot in the AI community called quantization. And for example, Facebook releases the 70 billion model of Llama 2, the community goes ahead and quantizes the stuff to get down to like 6-bit or 4-bit to be able to then like run it on their local machines. Mm-hmm. So, and that's how NVIDIA cheated a bit. They took this FP4 format, and their increase in speed in that FP4 format was like 200x to the previous generation. If you look at the like more used stuff in the actual models, it's not that huge, but it's still a lot. So it's still a big jump, especially for a year-on-year upgrade. So NVIDIA really has it going there.
So what's the difference between the computational, I don't know, between the H level chips and the B, the new Blackwell chips?
I tried to find the actual numbers. Now I think the FP4 performance was even like somewhere in the ballpark of 200x or something. Wow. I think the other stuff was a bit more like 7x. Yeah, 7x. Something around that. Which, like, year over year is still really good. And yeah, they have a larger chip, so he even made a bit fun of like he held up the old one and the new chip and was like, Hopper is the previous generation, the new one is Blackwell, and it's like a chip two times the size basically, and kind of like size isn't all, like in Hopper you don't have to feel bad. it was a bit cringy, but okay.
Yeah. Can I ask, so what is the impact really? Is it, will this difference be felt by smaller organizations, medium, big corporations? Like who is the target users of these chips?
That's actually a really good question, because, and that's something I learned now from the NVIDIA, like around the NVIDIA conference, we still, all the stuff we use still on the 2022 architecture. We haven't even had the performance of the H chips in our everyday lives, so people are still building up the H chips. So until we get like the new Blackwell performance, might be next year or something, because the data centers are now have to be built, the chips have to be produced. There's still like a huge surge in requests for the nodes that only TSMC has. So it's still a limited supply, and everyone's buying from NVIDIA. Like if you look at their statements, they basically quote only the biggest CEOs of the industry, and they all buy from NVIDIA. So you can imagine that's a war, and NVIDIA, I guess they can just dictate the price as they want and as they feel, because nothing comes even close.
From performance perspective, right?
Yeah. And also, not only performance, NVIDIA also delivers all the tooling, which is basically just well-used and well-known in the community. So all the CUDA cores, all the libraries, everything is just mainly NVIDIA-focused. So I try to run some local speech-to-text, and I couldn't run it because I hadn't had CUDA, because all the libraries were on NVIDIA's CUDA chips and optimized for that. So there are sometimes you have translation layers and stuff like that, but still like the de facto standard is all the NVIDIA tooling they provide, which makes it even clearer why they see themselves as a foundry and all, of course, try to keep the people in their system, their ecosystem. And the robotic stuff comes now on top of it. They also have some metaverse-y stuff, but more like with production in mind and CAD design and stuff like that. So yeah, it's they do a lot of things really right, and playing with everyone is one of it. So like I say, I think they dictate the price wherever they want.
So the H100 chips, you know, were bought out like hotcakes, right? So I'm assuming that, realistically speaking, as you mentioned, so the organization will be able to get their hands on these Blackwell chips no sooner than probably next year, just because of probably there's going to be as high of a demand. Like,
the stuff has also to be deployed. I think when we see the GTC, I'm pretty sure they already have the orders dialed in and are ready to go. But before it gets to the mainstream where we feel it in our APIs, I think that's still taking some time. I'm also not sure how much all the models and stuff like that, how much stuff has to be optimized. I mean, maybe like even... So I don't know how much it is plug and play for if you really want to expose an API. But like if you think about NVIDIA has for AI compute exaflop performance in one tower, like in one like bunch of servers, just to give you some perspective on that, there are like 2 or 3 exaflop supercomputers in the world, and for AI, NVIDIA delivers one you can buy, and like I can have it in my room here. Not from I wouldn't be able to deliver the power needed, so you need really really thick cables for that. Yeah.
That's by the way also
something that, especially if you think about a company and their CO2 footprint and stuff like that, every generation getting it faster not only is not the only thing, it also gets more efficient most of the times. Mm-hmm. which needs less energy, which makes it more and more practical for, like, right now we're still at the point where AI inference and stuff like that is so expensive that it is like everything but not environmentally friendly to do AI stuff. So the further we get, the more sophisticated and maybe also specialized chips we get, the less you as a company have to look at your CO2 footprint. And in the end, you maybe even have to pay less of some certificates for reducing or like countering a CO2 or something. That's definitely something to be aware of.
But so the cost, one approach that even with this GTC conference, not even Blackwell, well, I think it's related, but I saw a lot of influencers actually being sent packages of these servers, including the Blackwell chips. Did you see that as well? And they were promoting, they were basically creating, I don't want to call it sweepstakes, but people would sign up and then basically one person would sign up for the conference, but then you also get a chance to win one of those Blackwell chips. I've entered a few of them because I was like, even if I win, I'm sure Edgar will be able to guide me on how to use it. If anything, I'll send it to him.
I'm like on the product side. I'm not developing any AI myself, like training and stuff like that. But there is a big part of me that's like the nerd and that would love to have one of these at home and like just put it to its paces. But then on the other hand, I maybe even can't because I'm not like deep enough into all this
you
stuff.
You can always put it on the black shelf, you know, or like on a glass shelf behind.
Yeah, like if you think how much, they showed one computer, which is basically like it kind of is a small form factor in like server speech at least, which has already so much power. And also there is one like smaller thing that really is interesting is that NVIDIA puts not one monolithic die, like it's not one big chip, but they combined two smaller chips and also memory modules and connected them with a new interconnect, which I thought it's 2 terabyte, but it's even 10 terabyte per second of data they can do back and forth. And that's important because then production of these chips is not as expensive. And the chips still function for the CPU, like for the operating system, they function still as one because they have so much interconnect, which is basically the same that Apple did with their M2 Max chips and M2 Ultra chip, or like M1 even back in the day. And they showed that it worked, so I'm pretty confident that NVIDIA's approach will also work because, just to keep it short, it was a pain in the it was a real pain to program for systems with two separate CPUs because there is so much allocation stuff and things you have to take into consideration that it like bloats the complexity of your code to a degree where it's less less manageable and you make more mistakes and it's not performant. Having it working as one chip for the operating system is huge for developers.
Do you think, just maybe I'll throw a question before we may want to maybe move to a different,
move on.
Yeah. But do you think, just at the pace that some of these chips are being democratized, expanding, exponentially growing, performance is increasing, that we'll see in the very near future that level of performance on all of our devices, meaning that computers, would we have access to significantly higher computational powers? Would you still rely on kind of the data centers hugging all of
that? The interesting stuff is our mobile devices already are going that direction for quite some time now. And Qualcomm, for example, last week presented their first notebook chips, or like the new Norton chips, and they're they put a lot of emphasis on their NPU, which is the neural processing unit. Apple does it for, like, I think since the iPhone 5, they have started building that stuff in. So right now the AI chip in my MacBook Pro is really capable. But then again, you have that AI chip, but you only have the Apple interfacing and the Apple developer tooling, and I can't execute models without bringing them into the whole ML network stuff. Otherwise, I could do inference on systems which I couldn't do otherwise.
So you can't do end-to-end development without access to.
No, it's still kind of a fragmentation going on. I think there will be solutions on operating system level, and Apple is also open sourcing stuff right now. But even Apple's own open source stuff does not work on their MPU. That's still to be solved, I guess, even by Apple themselves. I'm pretty confident this year's developer conference will bring a big leap in that direction, because I'm pretty sure this year will be a lot of AI emphasis on Apple. Especially they now had 2 months ago, they released Ferret, their first own small model. And like a week ago, they released a paper how to train multimodal small models. And I'm pretty sure our devices will soon be capable of running a lot of stuff locally.
Speaking of that paper that I think you're kind of alluding to, was that the release of the MM1 model?
No, the MM1 is like just a paper. It's just more of there is no model connected to that. Like, they have this Ferret model.
Oh, I
searched it up. It was more the paper of like how they did it. And there might be a release of an MM1 model. I'm not sure about that. I haven't read the paper, but for now, it was more the scientific side of things.
Oh, I see.
And how to.
I think the MM1 is also a paper that they've talked about, but it is an actual model. So it is comparable to GPT multimodal type of version.
Yeah, but that's what they also said for the Ferret model when they released it. And this is one you can just use right now. Apple just open sourced it. So I didn't try it, honestly, but because I didn't even know about the claim. They released it in November or so.
Mm-hmm.
No, or was it? No, or February. February, January, like somewhere around that. Like, and they released it, and I wasn't even aware that they want to bring the same vision capabilities that GPT-4 Vision has, because it's a pretty small model, and if it can do that, it's pretty impressive.
I think it's to put it in perspective, I think it's like 4 times less the size of GPT.
Yeah, minimum,
So it's a significantly smaller model, but I think the level of quality that it can produce...
I might try it out for next episode and give you some something. Or maybe we do like separate video on the channel.
So what are your thoughts as to Apple is coming on scene, right? All of a sudden.
I'm really waiting for that. Yeah.
So but they're now starting to publish, because for a really long time you didn't really hear much from them about AI, because they've been...
They go open source, which is even more interesting. Like, when did Apple do that? So...
Yes, I'm just curious. Why do you think they've been silent for so long, and now all of a sudden, 2024, they're like, "Here's this in AI that we're doing. Here's this."
Because it's how Apple always did it. Like, they were never first to anything. Like, period. Maybe the iPad, but even that is debatable. So because Microsoft did their first Surface devices, and like they were tablet like devices, like maybe not multi-touch, more of like stylus stuff, but yeah, still. I think Apple is a sleeping giant on that, because they have all these devices, billions of them, running with neural processing engines. The only thing that could bite Apple is they, in terms of memory on the device, they lag behind Android big times. Because I think even my iPhone now, and I have the biggest model, has like 8 gigabytes of RAM. This is basically, I think, more than a 7 billion model won't be even remotely possible, and I think even smaller. And that's even worse on older devices, because iOS was always so memory efficient, they didn't need much memory, and that could bite them now. It's a bit different on the notebooks themselves, so the MacBooks might get even more sophisticated stuff because they just have more RAM to load stuff. But even then, loading a large language model on my MacBook is the only thing that gets the thing heated up. Like, I don't hear the fans even when I export our podcast video. But when I load an LLM, jeez, the fans are spinning.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's the thing. You have to keep it small and still capable to be running the whole time on your device. Otherwise, I think it won't be practical at all.
So that's insightful. So you're basically saying that maybe one of the reasons why, they're kind of they're watching, just kind of understanding where the market is going. But it sounds like they're also like, oh, crap, none of our devices can't even support any of these models. Probably need to figure out how we can build our own efficient one. But then also we need to optimize our operating system to accommodate whatever that model ends up being. And guess what? Probably that model needs to be multimodal, which is why we kind of have the MM1 kind of release, and then probably enhancing Siri with it, right? Because you want them to do what changes.
I hope they bury Siri and then just come up with something completely new.
Why?
They might also update Siri. Because,
why are you hating on Siri?
Because it's hateable.
I just asked her a question this morning. I was like, what temperature is it outside? And my daughter was like, oh, I know her name now.
So my friend of mine had his child in the car, and he was asking Siri for directions, and then child from behind was like, I like Siri. She's nice.
See? Why are you hating on Siri?
The thing is, it's like they never updated it since the first release. At least it feels like that. But it was the first of its kind, that you have to give them that. So they were basically the first on doing like AI on your smartphone. Even if they didn't go big on AI on device, I still cannot do shit with Siri when I'm not online. So Google is definitely better than Google can even translate without internet, I think. So yeah,
I can't do actions. Hopefully, in addition to large language models, hopefully they'll bring actions and then being able to do things within your phone.
I see stuff like the RabbitMQ device, or the pin. I always forget how it's called. But the one which you get on.
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name of it either. Yeah.
Yeah, but like the whole new, I think they have a direction where I was like, I wish I could just do it on my phone. I don't need an extra device for that, because it won't replace my phone anyway. So not even close. So why bother bringing out a device? Why not just release the ecosystem and integrate it into my device? And in terms of integration, of course, Apple and Google and who else has its own operating system are in the best spot to integrate it deep into the system, I'm pretty sure this will bring also the whole iOS experience into a new era, and I really look forward to that, because this is like my main device. I pay huge sums of money every 2 years for getting the new one. The current one, I paid €1,800 or something for my.
So you're one of those crazies that updates the phone every time the new version comes out.
No, that's too much work. Just every 2 to 3 years, kind of. But of course, if Apple this year releases all the AI stuff, mm-hmm. the next iPhone comes with double the RAM to accommodate for that, of course I will switch.
Yeah, likewise. The pin, was that Humane AI?
The Humane pin, yeah.
Yeah. Just wanted to mention it in case the listener is like, what the heck were they talking about? Yeah.
It's basically a pin you can stick to your clothing and with a magnet, and then you have a laser display if you need a display. Otherwise, you use only voice, which has a lot of implications in and of itself. So, like I said, for example, my AirPods are pretty functioning really, really good with the Hey Siri command, and sorry for everyone whose Siri is now activated. and just have the AI integration on my phone and be able, through the Hey Siri command, to use proper AI would be game-changing in and of itself. Like, do a research in the web for me or stuff like that, stuff you can do on the go. For me, it couldn't even go far enough. I would love to have it coding while sitting on my dashboard. So yeah,
an interesting perspective. Do you think now, you know, given that I want to say Apple owns 50% of the market share in the mobile phone market, so it's a significant share. So let's say they do come up with LLM-based Siri or this chatbot that lives now on every device. Do we need ChatGPT?
I don't know. The market is so dynamic, and ChatGPT is still so far ahead from like an app perspective and usability. I use Copilot more often to simple stuff, and even then, like half the time, I then open ChatGPT to do the same thing there because it's just better. And with Microsoft, it's like if you use Copilot, it's kind of iffy. Also, which model do they use? And I think now they released the turbo model for Copilot chat. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the M365 Copilot, but the Copilot chat experience. So what should I use? I also use Gemini sometimes, which is okay. Especially I've now used Google Cloud a bit, and asking Gemini for Google Cloud related stuff was pretty useful. Mm-hmm. And that's also the same for Copilot. If I use Copilot chat for Microsoft Azure related stuff, it's cool. It's really nice. It's someone just explains me how to use Azure finally, and do it on my terms. And also all the CLI commands and stuff like that. So like everything you need to use this the respective cloud infrastructure is so well defined and askable, basically, in this. So yeah.
Well, I think maybe not in the near future, as kind of these models, it sounds like they still have some time to mature, to like really get to a level of accuracy, and maybe people's trust, and kind of like I want to say like even relationship with them, because right now the default chatbot that people go to is ChatGPT, and everything else is typically in addition to. So sometimes people do use Perplexity as one, but still ChatGPT is like a dyad. I do think that releasing Siri is going to be quite disruptive, because Siri already lives in that convenience of having that accessibility through the phone. Like, why do you even have to, you know, go to Copilot? So, and I think Samsung is probably going to follow suit, and
they already did.
Bing?
Yeah. The latest releases of the Galaxy series, they have Galaxy AI, I think it's called.
Oh, it is? And it's LLM enabled?
Yeah. It works partly on device, and it gives you a really good preview of what's possible. So they have also call screening and stuff like that. So it's really, they really made a big leap for, considering that Bixby is something they did too. So it's really, Galaxy AI is really something. They are really, really come out of the gates with a proper product there, which is actually kind of useful. Of course, it's still a lot of stuff is focusing on photos, and I'm pretty sure Apple will too. Mm-hmm. I think with Apple, it's always like they also will release new APIs. They also will release new toolkits and SDKs. And also they have not only the iPhone, they also have the Vision Pro, which they now need to support, mm-hmm. Which is even more interesting for all the AI stuff, because it generates stuff into your field of view. And I think that's really, really interesting.
They have, I wasn't aware of Samsung because I'm not a Samsung user. I don't think I even own the Samsung device. So, yeah, but that's interesting. So, and one other thing that you mentioned is that, you know, with moving these large language models, vision, like multimodal to the phones, really the phones now come with also like really excellent cameras. I think mine come with like three lenses. So the quality of the images of what you're able to capture, videos, whatever you're submitting to it, is really high quality. So, yeah, I think that's, it's going to be game changing. I mean, like some of these use cases, I'm already like mind blown, where you could show it a room and say like, hey, can you suggest how to furnish this? And it's like,
yeah,
why do we even
yeah.
have to go to a different room? And maybe, I don't know, it'd be even more game changing if this kind of came to the device as a standard feature, rather than you have to go to ChatGPT and pay a subscription. So
yeah.
I think, again, this is why I think it is going to be quite, I anticipate it to be quite disruptive if this is basically the approach that they're going to take.
And I think one thing they have to take into consideration, which is really, really important, is stuff at scale. And that's why Google always has a problem that they cannot just throw things out, because they have just another scale than someone like OpenAI has. And that's why you really have to be sure that what you release works. Like Apple billion devices, mm-hmm. hello. Like if they put a server behind it and everything goes to that server, the server is pretty much screwed.
They need to partner with NVIDIA. That's what they need to do.
Yeah. But still, like, there is a lack of chips. So getting it to a point where that can run mostly locally on device is just beneficial for the whole experience in and of itself. So, I'm pretty sure this is something if you're Apple, to take this into consideration.
Yeah, Apple, in case you're listening, if you want that advice. staying on the topic of
it's close to free in terms of your revenue.
we'll handle it for you. But in related to large language models, so Grok, one basically again, I guess that's the enumeration.
This time
of the
we're
model.
Talking about the XAI model Grok from Elon.
Correct, yeah. Elon Musk's Grok, Grok. Model going open source. When we talked about it earlier, you were quite excited about it and said that it was quite game changing. It's a huge model though. I looked at it. It's like 340.
Was I? No, I said I wasn't impressed.
Oh, did you? Am I making stuff up?
Yeah.
But I thought it was...
You hallucinate.
I think you did mention that, you know, it's going open source. I think it's game changing.
No, I think going open source and being uncensored, that's already interesting. That's you have to want that. And also, it's not even like it's completely raw. So a model, when it's released, an open source model, you oftentimes read something like instruct or something in the title, which means that it's already trained on some data to answer in a specific way. Grok released without anything, like it's completely raw basically, which was kind of interesting because they basically say
without not, you mean when you say raw, it means that there's no guardrails, no rules.
No guardrails, no pre-trained behavior for being a chat model or something. It's like completely, and people then take some open source training data and train it to be an instruct model, for example, so that you can have a chat-like experience with that. So they basically released the raw weights of that. And I'm not sure. I think they trained it on Twitter, as far as I know.
I'd be surprised if they didn't, because it is where they launched.
Or X, like Twitter X. Yeah, but you get what we mean. Yeah, but this, it's a huge model. Yeah, you're right. Like I said, people go ahead and quantize stuff. Quantizing means reducing the bit size of the weights themselves, which makes the model a lot smaller while not losing that much performance. I've seen some tests, basically tested on the X side itself. yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe with some more fine tuning through the community, it will become more. It will give out better results. But from what I've seen, it's no. It's no model to yeah get rid of GPT-4. But yeah, open sourcing it is kind of an interesting move, nonetheless.
Do you think more companies will come to the forefront and offer their models to convert them from closed to open, considering that seems to be the trend?
No, I'm not sure. What do we have with it? Like, and even Grok, like, okay, they released the one. Do we know if this is the basis for Grok 2, or is Grok 2 completely newly developed and newly trained? Then okay, GPT-2 is also open source, like, and even 3, I think it's 3, like the normal GPT-3, is it open source? I'm not sure.
Well,
how much it's worth, we will see. People often misunderstand open source. Like, open source is just, if you open source stuff, you get millions of developers jumping on this. Mm-hmm. Like depending on the topic, of course, but you have like such a huge community. Like you wouldn't be able to do this in your own company because you just don't have the resources. And you open source the stuff, and then the open source community jumps on it and does stuff you weren't even thinking of. And that's a huge opportunity for development and for further getting stuff forward. That's what Uncle Elon is looking for, I guess, and that's why they open sourced it. And also just to give the finger to OpenAI, I guess.
We're here too, right? Breathing down your back. But because I think, you know, I don't know, I just feel conflicted with all of these models coming unseen, and more models are being developed. They're trained on very similar data sets. We're running out of knowledge. Yep. There's going to be a point where, you know, right now it does state that they could grow and improve exponentially, but the critical piece that it needs is data to be trained on. So if we run out of data, then everyone kind of starts to level off. And so what are we improving at that point? So will models become commoditized? Because they're really kind of are... Right now, we're looking at what model is using what data, but ultimately, I mean, they're very similar, and I think there's going to be a marginal difference between them.
I think models are already trained on like 70% synthetic data.
Oh, they've switched that much.
And I think we have there are a lot of forefronts you could tackle besides the raw data itself. One of which is data quality. I think Microsoft showed it with Orca, which is only trained on books. Or Phi-2, which is a small language model, which also has only, I think, scientific papers and like really high-value text for use for training, and is therefore really good at reasoning compared to the
which
size.
Model did you say it was?
Phi-2. That's Phy-2. And yeah, if you look at these, so we have a lot of stuff we can tackle. Also, as far as I understand, and also from Sam Altman's interviews he gave like the last weeks, you kind of feel there will be another leap technologically. I think we said it like 2 episodes ago, like system one, thinking, system two, thinking. Models being capable of really like taking time to think something through. That's something that will give us a big leap forward besides the data. But on the other side, you have like 2 different companies, Google and OpenAI, and they both have a vision model. And I used the same prompt on both models, and they had the same quirks I had to get rid of. Like exactly the same issues of not giving me the answer like I wanted, so I had to rework it. But it was the same issue on both models, even if they are completely different models, which I found really interesting because I know like There has to be some similarity in the data set. Otherwise, why should it do that?
Yeah, so. And that's what I'm basically saying. So unless you, and maybe they're accommodating some of the stuff with synthetic data, or as you mentioned, that there's a technological change that leads to, or some change in the approach in how we train these systems or how these systems infer information from the data, or like the inference of the system really changes that whole process. They're just going to go and kind of level off at the same performance, and they're going to start to look similar as what you basically you're experiencing. And then the difference between them is going to be very marginal. And that's basically what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So,
yeah, definitely.
Just an observation.
So, okay. I think we leave it with a completely news episode today. after we skipped the news on the last episode. We plan to talk about Devin, the AI engineer too, which was also all over the news. But I think we will schedule this to the next episode.
Let's do it.
And then, talk also a bit more about how you can use AI today for your development purposes. And I think I can finally give some practical insight into what that means. And Lana can ask a lot of non-programmer questions about that.
Yeah. And I think, that's one thing, and I'll just kind of add my two cents of really inviting our listeners to provide us feedback, because we do sometimes get nerdy and, we talk about quite technical stuff, more on the development implementation. Do you want to hear us talk more about maybe the strategy side, or do you benefit from understanding kind of in the weeds of how these models work, the implications of some of the news that are coming on your business and how it relates? Just want you to understand like what's resonating with you, and that would also provide us feedback for what should we be doing less and more of, or what should we be introducing as new topics. So again, inviting you guys for feedback, truly appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. And also the development episode was out of feedback where someone wanted to know something about AI and web development. So we hear you. We try to consider you as soon as we can plan it in. And hope that you liked today's episode. I think it was a good chat.
Yeah.
Right? Well, today was a good, or at least I talked a lot. So that's feels good for me at least.
He's like, I can pat myself on the back and then go to sleep now. So Edgar is in Germany, and we have a significant time difference. So it is towards the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I think he can definitely take a breather, drink some tea, and go to sleep.
I definitely had my share of words today. That's for sure.
Oh, funny.
But I still hope I could give some valuable insights about what all the stuff that is presented and shown on LinkedIn and means, and hope you get some insights. If you have any questions, of course, reach out to us down in the comment sections. If you're on YouTube, write us on LinkedIn. If you listen to us on Spotify, and really enjoy getting further along with our podcast and getting our groove dialed in. So I hope you feel the same.
Sorry, that was not expected.
And that's also part of the show. So have a nice day. And last words to Lana.
Thank you. Yeah, again, thank you for tuning in. This is episode, I think, 8 for us. So I appreciate your support. If you've taken the time to listen to us and, hit a like, subscribe, to show some support,
leave a follow.
I think this gives us also, we check in on a weekly basis just to see what kind of feedback we're getting, and again, it's something that we really value, and it's a sign of approval also for us, as we continue to grow and that we're providing relevant topics. So again, appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for your support. And again, invite anyone to provide us feedback so we can do more of what is impactful to you and what information that you find valuable. We'd love to hear it, and we'll bring it into the episode sometime in the future. So thank you again for listening.
Bye.